Hello and welcome to the Art and Industry of Short Films, presented by Guy Magar and Action Cut, hosted by Philip Burgess. And we welcome you here this evening. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're here to talk about the art and industry of short films, how to use them to launch careers through festivals, success stories, and just the whole art of the short form and how you can move that from short form to long form and all the recent trends that filmmakers and writers have more opportunities than ever before. Very privileged to have with us this evening Guy Magar, who is a force in his career, who has been directed, hundreds of episodic television and numerous films as a writer, director, producer. And we're going to get into all of his tales from the trenches, and then just watching how the business has changed so dramatically. I mean, obviously certain things stay tried and true, and yet so many other things are shifting and evolving as we go. And so really looking at those opportunities that are emerging that have never been there before, and look at what some of these trends are. So welcome, Guy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. So, glad to be here. And hello to everyone again.
Hi.
Yeah, we got a real quick representing, because I know we've got people, from the shout-outs before, we've got people from coast to coast. We've got everybody from San Francisco, Phoenix, Illinois, Ohio, Boston, Atlanta, Florida. Anybody else I'm missing?
Ontario.
Feel free to rep. Pardon?
Ontario,
wow. Excellent. Well, welcome all. We're really happy to have you here tonight. And now I'd like to turn the floor over to Guy. So, Guy, let's start with how did you kind of find the short film as a medium, and where did you sort of start where this became a tool for you?
Well, a few years back when I was in film school, we were making short films. And if you want to enter this industry, you've got to make some short films. I mean, one of the things that we talk about at the Action Cut seminar is me encouraging everyone in the room to make short films. And one of the interesting things about that is that a lot of the people who are writers don't even think about directing. And one of the great joys of filmmaking is to write and direct. So one of the things that I always do is encourage writers to start writing their material to go out and shoot it themselves. So the short film has really changed in the last 10 years. I mean, 10 years ago, there were no digital cameras. You couldn't walk into Sears or Circuit City and buy buy a digital camera and be able to pay, $15 a month for it. There was no such thing as home editing systems. You know, there were very, very expensive things that mostly production companies and studios had. So there's been a revolution in our business in the last 10 years, and it focuses on the short film because now everybody can make them. Their digital cameras are very inexpensive, and buying an editing system for your home is very inexpensive, and all of a sudden you're a studio. And there's been an explosion of short films, which is phenomenal for our industry because this is how you get in, by showing your short films.
And can you speak also for writers, even as writers, not directing, but just writing short content for directors who are looking for shorts? Because you get to see your writing produced in a pretty short time frame. If you can get, it can be done.
That's another great thing for writers, because a lot of writers like to write their short stories, or they have ideas, and they write 15, 20 page scripts, and the idea is there. And then, well, what do you do now? You can't sell it to a studio. They're not interested in short films. So you put it up at different sites for writers and hope that maybe a director will like the material. And all of a sudden, short films, scripts become short films. For example, there's an award at the Action Cut Short Film Competition where the writers of a winning film, they get interviewed by Script Magazine, the writers. So it's a great way for a writer, for example, to get his stuff done by short filmmakers. And if they win or they get accolades and they get awards at the festivals and the competitions, it can really push a writer forward. So for writers and directors, this is a dream come true. It's also a dream come true for actors, because they're going to be cast in these films, and they can use these films. Usually they work for nothing on these short films, maybe one or two or three or four days, and they get usage of that material in exchange for their services, and now they've got something to put on their reel, or if it's a phenomenal performance, it can even help writers. So it's become an incredible tool for everyone who wants to begin to get into the filmmaking business.
That's great. Now, let's talk about how you used a short film to get started.
Well, like I said, when I was in film school, I was making short films. I made a documentary. It was 10 minutes long, black and white. It was made at a film school. I went to the London Film School, and then I went to the American Film Institute here. And that documentary, I didn't know what to do with it. A 10-minute documentary was about the homeless people in London. So I sent it to a documentary festival. San Francisco has a great documentary section, and it won the Grand Jury Prize that year. And that helped me decide to get into the business. And then when I went to the American Film Institute, I made my first dramatic film. It was a 25-minute action thriller, again, using equipment from a school. And that particular short film got me my first agent and got me my first deal at Universal. So I can't encourage people enough to make short films, and for writers to write them and actors to act in them, and for producers who want to begin by beginning to make short films, because today the whole world has changed in the last 10 years, and now it's all about exposure. And the Internet is full of it. I mean, from YouTube to dailyreel.com, where you can go and see short films and put up your short films. And it's all about, can you deliver an audience? You know, if you're good at what you do and your films are good, they're going to deliver an audience. And that's what it's all about. And that's why these sites are becoming, you know, so valuable to advertisers, because it's all about traffic on the Internet.
And that's a huge change. I mean, that didn't exist 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, even a year ago, the access. But as we're talking about the art of this, now the boundaries to access, because before, I mean, obviously when you had started, we didn't have those points of distribution.
Right.
And now we do. But by the gates kind of being open, by the idea that we have everybody sort of representing in the entire North America on this call, you know, suddenly the bar has gone up. So you see thousands, in what you do now, it's like you see thousands of short films. What distinguishes the ones that get noticed from the ones that just don't? Because now everybody's competing for attention.
Well, here's the problem, because there's always a problem with new things. And because the equipment is cheap to get, people run out and they get equipment when they get interested in film, and then they get an idea to do something, and they go ahead and they shoot a story. But they never develop the story, and the development, the characters are not interesting, and the dialogue is not great. So one of the first problems with short films is the screenwriting. And, you know, people get excited about using the equipment and going out and getting their buddies and friends over for a weekend, and they shoot, like, you know, like a bank robbery or something. And it just doesn't work because the story is not together yet, and the characters haven't been developed yet, and the dialogue hasn't been worked on as long as it should be until it's phenomenal. So the first problem with short films is screenwriting. And that's one of the things that we do at Action Cut, because it's all about visual screenwriting. So for people who go out and buy equipment, they really need to learn what to do with that equipment. How do I tell that story, no matter what your story is? And the second problem of short films is the acting. A lot of people don't use professional actors. They use friends or their grandmothers or their girlfriends, and it just doesn't work, because you can tell when there's an amateur in front of a screen. And one of the things that we talk about a lot at the seminar is to be very, very careful once you're going to make a short film about your actors. You've really got to go out into your community and do some searching. And every community in the country has a theater group or an acting group of some kind, or maybe a SAG office if you live in Chicago or New York or Florida. And you can get people from SAG, professional actors, to work on your movie. Remember, you're only asking them to put in a couple of days' work, and what they get in exchange is something that they can show. So a lot of actors are willing to work on short films for free. All you got to do is give them a copy or give them their scene, for example. And it's so important to make sure that your casting is as good as you can get it. And like I said, in every community, there are actors. You got to find them. You got to go to the plays and the theater groups, or you got to go to sometimes they have acting groups or SAG groups, and you've got to be able to get in there and let them know what you're doing, and really get into the casting process. And do not make your film until you find just the right actors. So if you can get your screenwriting together and you can get the casting together, you're on your way. But one of the biggest problems are those two things, and we see them every year at the Action Cut competition.
Yeah, I can actually speak to that having gone to USC Film School, and they really give us a lot of technical knowledge in the film school, and one of the weaknesses of those films, and you see people who do them on a dime and people who do them for $100,000 or more, is the acting and the writing isn't where it needs to be.
Right.
And so I can definitely speak to that. You're absolutely, absolutely on the mark on those. And the idea that the opportunities are there, people's films really need to stand out above and beyond, because it is so the doors are open, but it's very, very competitive. I want to talk. We've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. So really, guys, hang in there. I know. I mean, I want to talk about a couple things that, because after a 20-year career, and he, guy, can you just, I want to get back, we're going to talk in a minute, I want to talk about some of the actors and directors, actors, directors, producers, industry professionals that you've worked with that this audience would know and go, oh, yes, of course, you did, you know, so I want to go talk a little bit more about your career,
right.
Career, and also look at some of the success stories we've seen and some of the other opportunities that are available now that are just in you know, as everything's changing. But I want to kind of come back to, just for a minute, if our audience could just bear with us, as we want to really just focus for just on one of the things you set up is you set up a short competition, and you set
right.
this up 3-4 years ago because you realized there was just a dearth of opportunities, and now there's beginning to be more and more, and giving writers and writer directors and filmmakers the opportunities. And you put together an amazing, amazing package of that. Can you, because your latest competition just ended, and we have, oh, actually, we're going to have an award winner from 2 years ago who's gone to a pretty amazing career after your win. Join us also at the end of the call, so stay tuned for that. But I want to talk about just this competition. You're me having dinner tonight with the winner.
Right.
But talk about that for a minute. I just want to give everybody
okay.
a sense of what you're doing with the competition.
When I started the Action Cut Seminar Company back in 1999, I never had any ideas about doing a competition. I really wanted to set up, if I could figure out a way to do it, and I did, and it took me months to design it, a two-day course where people would get as much as possible about filmmaking from A to Z, covering everything they need to know on a creative level in 2 days. And remember, at the seminars, I always talk about making short films. So what happened was, after the first couple of years, a lot of our graduates started making short films. And then they started emailing me saying, okay, now what do I do? Because most of the festivals are for features. All the big festivals are for features. And they have sometimes a small sidebar for short films. There's not a lot of short film festivals that just focus on short films. And the ones that do, they don't give a lot to the winners. I mean, I keep talking to my winners and who have won other competitions, and they got things like a trophy and stuff like that, but nothing to help their careers. And I wasn't interested in getting into the festival business, but when the graduates said, what do we do with our shorts, I realized there was a need for a competition that would provide a prize package that would help them move forward in their careers. So I spent 6 months talking. Sorry?
I was going to say, who are some of your sponsors? I'm sorry, go on with what you're saying about these 6 months, and then I'd love to know more about who some of your sponsors are.
Okay. So I went ahead and spent about 6 months talking to a lot of people that I know, all my connections in the business and people that I work with and respect, and I told them what I had in mind. I wanted to do a competition where the winners got amazing prizes, and we put together 125 prizes, which includes meetings, because that's one of the biggest things that a filmmaker needs. He needs to network. So, for example, if you win, you're going to meet Joe Alves. Joe Alves designed Jaws and Close Encounters of a Third Kind. You're going to meet agents and managers, and you're going to meet lawyers and producers and people like Jeff Schaff, for example, who won the Emmy for photography 4 times. So what we're trying to do is provide the winners a special package, which really I don't see a lot of other people doing, to help you move forward with your career and open some Hollywood doors. And that's when I decided to put together a competition to make it different from other festivals and to make a price package that would matter to filmmakers.
That's fantastic. And actually, just if people are wondering how Guy and I had hooked up, we're sort of on that list, and we're just really impressed with what he was doing and felt really important to, you know, support because we know from my end that on the literary management side that there's a knowledge gap, and we want to see people succeed. And so I think it's just fantastic what you're doing, which is why we're here today.
Yeah,
so thank
and
you
I would
that.
Like
so,
to invite everybody, whenever you feel like it, to go on the site, because on Saturday, this last Saturday, we actually, the juries, I don't serve on any of the juries, but the juries picked the winners, and we put them up on the website. And in case some of you don't know, you can actually go there and watch the films that won. And, you know, we have a lot of categories from student film to animation, documentaries, fiction. And there's an incredible music video. I just had dinner last night with a winner of a music video. If you watch it, I don't think you've seen many music videos as good as this guy. He's 22 years old. And I think he's a genius, and I, you know, I'm going to try and help him move forward because this guy is amazing. And if you want to see his work, it's on the website. So it's great because I get to meet wonderful new filmmakers, and we get to help them move forward in their careers, which is a pretty wonderful thing to do.
I love it. That's great. That's fantastic. That's and we're actually looking forward to meeting him as well. So that's that is part of how we all got together.
Right.
So. Want to talk about, you know, now let's back up to your career, which has been pretty just amazing, just to give people a context of, you know, you're teaching because you love it and you really, you come up and you've done plenty of time in the trenches and in the real world and having directed some of my favorite TV shows and you've
right.
worked on, and again, for all the studios and the networks and for, and in features and having directed General Corn, working with,
yeah,
so,
that was a lot of fun.
I know you want. Yeah, that was, and, you know, I'm obviously working with Bob Weinstein, and I know you don't like to name drop too much, but I think just to give people a sense of some of the, you tell me a wonderful story about just even working with Mr. T that I just found wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you meet a lot of amazing people during your journey, and if you love actors, and you got to love actors to be a director, I mean, you got to love them, and you got to know all about acting, and like Philippa said, I went to film school and I learned all about, you know, sound and lighting and editing, but they don't teach you much about acting or screenwriting. I don't know why, but they don't. And when I came back from film school in London, I lived in New York for 2 years where my family's from, and I took acting courses for 2 years as an actor, even though I don't want to be an actor, but I took that so I could understand all the different acting techniques that they had, and I could understand the dialogue and the vocabulary that you need to know as a director when you're whispering a direction to an actor, especially a difficult one, and you need to get them there quickly. Like, for example, if it's a crying scene, you know, nobody can cry for an hour. So you don't want to get to take 14 and 15 and 16. What you want to do is get it around take 2 or 3 when it's nice and wonderful and fresh. And you got to know how to do that. You got to know how to be able to talk to actors and be able to relate whatever they've learned, because there's many different techniques that they have. And as a director, it's your job to know how they function and what it is that will give them the direction that you need to get them to where you want them to go. And like I said, you want to get there pretty quick. On a TV schedule, you better get it by take 2 or 3. On a feature schedule, even on a low budget, you can go to 4, 5, or 6. But working as an independent feature filmmaker and working for Miramax and those places, those schedules are really tight. I mean, I think we did the Corn picture, Children of a Corn, Revelation, based on the Stephen King original, we had, I think, about 21 days to shoot that feature. It was $2 million. So, you know, in the independent world, the schedules are tough. In the network television world, they're even tougher. I mean, to do an episode of Law and Order or to do an episode of, you know, Grey Anatomy, they're shooting them in 7-8 days. And that's pretty quick pace. So you don't have the time to get the performances you want unless you know how to do it and help your actors get there pretty quick, and that's your job as a director.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well,
and that's when I met Mr. T, who was amazing. I mean, the guy, I don't know if you guys remember, he used to wear, like, all these necklaces, these gold necklaces, and they were very, very heavy, and he had an assistant just carrying the necklaces to the set, and then he made you wait while he put one on at a time. He wouldn't put like 2 or 3 on. He'd put one on at a time. And I used to beg him to put like 4 or 5 at a time so we can get those 50 necklaces around them so we can get the roll cameras. And those are the kind of wonderful stories and the wonderful memories that you get from a career. But you got to love actors to be directors because, you know, they come in all shapes and sizes and different experience levels. And I've worked with wonderful people like George Peppard and Jennifer O'Neill, and that come to mind. And, you know, when you're working with amazing pros like that, it's just a joy to work with them because they come up with great stuff you haven't even thought of. And part of being a director is falling in love with the acting process, because when you see it happen in front of your camera, all you do is look up and say thank you.
That's great. Now, as I say, you also worked with Matt LeBlanc and have known him sort of before of his friend days.
Yeah, Matt was having problems in his career. This is just before Friends, and believe it or not, this is a true story. He was thinking about giving up the business. He was having a hard time getting an agent or a manager. He had two short series that failed after he made it big as a model and was brought here and was Christina Applegate's boyfriend and married with children. And the teenage girls fell in love with him, and the mail was so big they tried actually two series with him. And they both failed. So he was on his way back to Boston to be a carpenter, which is what he was before he became a model, and literally was leaving his home and couldn't pay for his home even. And we found him and cast him in the picture that I did with him, which is his first feature. And by the way, he was brilliant in it. And a few months after we were done, we became friends. He used to sleep at my house. We became buddies. He was like my little brother. And I remember a few months after we finished the picture, he told me he had an audition, and it sounded really stupid, and he didn't want to go, and he was going to leave town a week later. And I asked him what it was about, and it was said about six friends living in an apartment. And, you know, I told him, it's your job. As long as you're an actor, you've got to go to every audition. You've got to go through the grind, because you never know when you're going to hit the lottery. And he went that day, and he won the lottery, as we all know. And he's a multimillionaire today, and he's a star because of Friends, which happened about 4 months after we finished our film.
That's awesome. Well, actually, which reminds sort of me kind of coming up through USC, you never kind of know where anybody's going to be. And sort of for me, 15
Very
years
true.
Later, and it's really fun to sort of see a lot of my friends who came out of USC and had done short films, including George Lucas in Love and The Right Hook, and all of these guys have gone on to just phenomenal careers.
Oh, yeah.
Luke Greenfield actually directed our pilot for ABC and directed The Girl Next Door for Universal. And, I mean, yeah, it's just amazing just to sort of see where these guys have gone. A couple of the shorts.
By the way, can I ask you if Chris Petrie has joined us yet?
I am. How's it going, man?
Oh, wow. How are you, Chris?
Good. How you doing, dude?
I want to introduce everybody across the country to Chris Petrie, who's kind enough to take a few minutes from his work before his boss finds out and he has to hang up. He's up in Vancouver.
In the dark room here.
Sorry?
I know your boss. He was my classmate at USC. So. I was in school with Simon Millar. I mean, he was actually part of my graduating class, and he sold his spec and then went on to a great, very successful career.
And
his features and Shanghai Night Noons and Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Night, and all the rest of his deal at Disney.
Oh,
and Chris is calling from actually the offices of Smallville, the television series where he works. And Chris, if I could just ask you a couple of questions. I know everybody wants to know about your short, which was called When Jesse Was Born, and it won the grand prize at Action Cut in 2005, which is how I met Chris, because he flew down here with a cash award and took the meetings and received everything else that he had coming. But I want to start from the beginning real quick. How did you get the idea for doing your short? Because a lot of people wonder, well, you know, how do you get an idea to make a short? Can you talk real quick about the idea for Jesse?
Yeah, no problem. With Jesse, I just told a lot of kind of a weird childhood. So I just kind of sat down one day and started writing any funny and weird incidents that I could think of and combined them into, you know, a small 26-minute story that had a beginning, a middle, and end. And then from there, just went about, how the hell am I going to shoot this? And
so you wrote the script first, right?
I did, yeah.
And you made sure it was as tight as could be and as good as it could be?
Most definitely. I think I, you know, must have done, you know, 4 or 5 passes before I even showed anybody.
And then you went after that and kept rewriting after you did show it to everybody and they gave you their thoughts.
Yeah, it would take it to, you know, there's like producer assistants when I was trying to get people to help and, you know, give it to them. And, you know, as a short film, they'd be like, you know, it's got to come down a certain amount of pages. So then doing what I could to cram, you know, an entertaining story down from like, you know, 40 pages into a movie.
Can we talk a little bit about the casting? Because before you came on, we talked about making sure you have a great script before you shoot a short and make sure you do some great casting. And you had some amazing casting. Can you talk a little bit about that process for you?
Yeah, both of those are, I'd say, you know, I have three that I go at first. The number one is I don't do anything unless the story's bang on. I got to love the story and be attached to it for one. And then number two, it's all about, it all starts in the casting session and making sure you have your right actors and that they fit the role and that they're going to be gripping. And we had, you know, we got, whether it was lucky or just we all, the stars aligned. We had Ryan Robbins and Erica Carroll, which were awesome actors.
Did you get them through a casting director?
I knew Erica, happened to be dating her, which was beneficial.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That helps.
And I knew she was very talented. And through a casting director with Smallville, you know, what I always end up doing is I ask the assistants that were assisting our casting agency, and they helped us out on a weekend, and they knew Ryan, who's a very talented actor and works a lot in town, a lot of TV shows. Now he's like Battlestar Galactica and all the Stargates, and he came out, and he fell in love with the script, and from there on, we him and I still work today. I'm shooting a movie with him on Saturday.
Really? He's amazing. Please say hello to him for me. Talk a little bit about the shooting. How many days did it take you to shoot, Jesse?
We shot, I shot 8 days straight.
Eight days straight. Okay. I know you were lucky because you were working as a PA at the time on Smallville, and a lot of friends on the crew decided to help you during that time. Is that how you got it, a lot of those great people to help you?
Yeah, that's how I've kind of been lucky in keeping my production value up, which, like I said, that would be my third one. Story, casting, and then production value. And, you know, at the time, I think I'd moved up to a training assistant director and, you know, rounded up, you know, the second unit gaffer, DP'd it. And everybody that was on our show that was looking for steps up, you know, came out on weekends to do the career they kind of were aiming for. And we all took turns stepping up and using what we were training and learning to put a decent product on screen. And I think everybody, you know, when you're doing something like that, it was awesome that I got recognized, but it's often hard to accept the whole recognition when it's such a team effort at that level, you know, when you're working at such an independent
right.
level and everybody's putting everything in for free.
Here's the tough question. How much did it cost you to make your short film, and how did you finance it?
Well, yeah, to shoot it, it cost me about $1,300 for the 8 days. I pulled that many wicked favors.
Wow. That's a lot of favors, man.
Yeah, I think it was probably, you know, production value about $200,000-$300,000 worth of free stuff. I know I got free cameras from Panavision. I got all the short ends for free film. Where I ended up getting dinged was developing and transferring all that film. I think I ended up, by the time it was said and done, traveling to festivals and stuff too, was probably spent about $40,000 on it.
Wow. I know you told me you pumped your credit cards pretty good.
Yeah, I still live in a basement suite. But it, I would.
Can you talk a little bit about what you did to the film once it was done regarding festivals and competitions and where you went, how it did? Can you talk about that?
No problem. That was the best. You know, that's something I try to tell everybody that, you know, even thinks about making a movie, that there's nothing like taking it to a festival or somewhere and putting it on and just sharing what you've done with people, having people watch it. We started out, we went on to Without a Box because I'm all new to the whole how do I get it out there. And through Without a Box, that's where we ran into Action Cut. That's where we found all our first successes with Action Cut. And it seemed like after we won that, it just snowballed. We started winning, you know, I think we ended up winning 4 or 5, and our actors were getting nominated for awards. And we went down
to
Nashville. Yeah, I ended up in Sacramento and Nashville. And it was just, it's hard to explain how awesome it was, you know, travel around and party for a whole week straight with your movie. Is
wow.
Better time.
Dream time.
Yeah.
I heard that because of a film, you impressed your producers on Smallville and, you shut up and on the staff became the assistant of the executive producer. And now you're starting to direct second unit over there.
Yeah. It's pretty bizarre. You know, I started out parking cars here and, you know, the other day I was doing crane shots. And,
wow, good for you.
Teamster guys would come by and be like, dude, right on. it's been pretty awesome. I work under an awesome guy named James Marshall, the executive producer in charge of Vancouver here,
right,
funneling it through Los Angeles. And he's seen it, and at the time I was third AD, and it was actually right after we'd won Action Cut. We got a lot of buzz from it, and from Action Cut we got in Script Magazine and my picture was in Movie Maker and Script Magazine.
Oh, that's right. It was part of your prizes.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So, you know, we're going on tech surveys and scouts, and everybody's reading the magazine, and my boss is holding it up all proud like I'm his child.
You're the man, baby.
It was pretty awesome. So he pulled me aside and asked if I wanted to learn how to make a TV show and how to get an intensive schooling. So I'm kind of one of the lucky young filmmakers in town where I get like a one-man film school, and he gave me a key to the city kind of thing. And, you know, I go to casting sessions. He tosses me second units here and there.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I've learned a lot more about, you know, directing actors and, you know, spending. It's just been, it's an unreal film school, put it that way.
Well, I want to congratulate you for making Jesse and have it push you forward in your career. I have a feeling some people out there would like to ask Chris some questions. Is there any way, Philippa, that maybe
yeah,
you
can
get some
yeah,
people
I
to talk to Chris
that.
Directly?
Yeah, give me a second to do that. While I'm just pulling that up here in a second, just want to talk about, you're obviously working on episodic television, and Guy and I were talking before about the difference between sort of standalone shorts versus sort of now with YouTube and everything, you're getting them going episodic, which is just sort of interesting where you get the installments. And we were talking also like short form to long form and kind of a couple of the famous shorts that sort of started as shorts and then obviously gone on to television shows and movies, which are more on the animated side with South Park and The Simpsons.
Yes. It's pretty interesting seeing how much the short form is actually taking on a world of its own when you open up the doors of the internet and the possibilities there. I know there's, I don't know if you guys have seen an internet show called Sanctuary for All. It's currently it's done by a company up here in Vancouver, and they Stage 3 Media. I think they spent like $3 million budget. I'm not sure on the 10-15 minute webisodes that you can download for like $2 a pop, and from there generating, taking it to Comic Con, and when it's a bunch of the guys from Stargate, and you know, I've been meeting with them lately and just looking at, you know, different venues, taking some of the stories that I've done. And even as a screenwriter, you look at, you know, what you maybe would have broke into a 45, you know, minute or an hour-long drama, you know, bringing that down and how do you punch it into 15-minute webisodes. And that's actually becoming a form, you know, of...
Yeah, it really is. And that's one of the big trends. I mean, look at Will Ferrell and what he's doing with Nearby.
Yeah, people can, you know, it's a venue for people to get recognized as shows. I mean, YouTube... who knows where the possibility is going. I myself have been trying to get, you know, get to know more of it and how to do it and how to make it more profitable. And even if you flood YouTube and whatnot with your product, at least it's getting out there, getting the game out there.
Oh, absolutely. Now, question. Absolutely. Now, for people who don't work on Smallville and who don't sort of have that production crew but want to get started, can you also sort of talk about, you know, some of what Guy's doing with the Action Cut seminars, because you've got four of them coming around up this fall, and he's going to be in Fort Lauderdale, he's going to be in Chicago, he's going to be in New York, he's going to be in L.A. I've got some fantastic offers for people who are signing up on that for that. Can you talk about people, you know, who really want to get started? And
well, actually, Chris, part of Chris's prizes was he won a seminar, so he was actually here in L.A.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah.
So he can talk about it.
Please speak to that. I would love that.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, I still use... along with it came like booklets and whatnot, and you know, I still go in and there's some great great pointers. It's awesome. It's a wicked seminar in terms of directing, and it opens up a lot of eyes, you know, in terms of directing television. And Guy was mentioning it, I overheard when I got in, you know, the speed at which you know, you need to sometimes move, especially when you don't have money, or if you're on a TV show. But I find doing a lot of indies, you know, I move at the speed of television just so I got to get through what I can. So for folks that haven't, you know, want to get out and want to go make a movie, that seminar is awesome. It'll give you it's a wicked crash course. And that pack that you get that has all the DVDs, it's priceless as well.
Yeah, the DVD collection.
Yeah, that thing.
You got that, too, as a prize, right?
I got that, too. But, yeah, that stuff, that'll definitely get you up and running, so you can, you know, you can get through, you know, shooting your first movie if that's what you want. But the best thing to do is get out there and just start doing it. I mean, the first thing I ever did was definitely wasn't Schindler's List. You know, it was just you get out and you just keep going and you keep plugging and you learn by doing it and getting out with your friends and getting out with cameras and making movies. I watched a bunch of the shows And then I told those Canadian kids, those student film. That was great.
Oh, yeah.
That won the award. They were good. That was, you know, they were using digital effects and visual effects and stuff.
Wasn't that amazing?
I can't believe that stuff. I've seen people doing it. The stuff you can do with just consumer products like Adobe After Effects and what you can do today in terms of the digital technology is phenomenal.
I know. If you get a chance, look at the music video that just won. It's on the website. It's all green screen. It's absolutely amazing. Just the kids sitting down with a couple different programs and put it together, which was just amazing. And I think you'll enjoy it a lot.
I took today and I watched a bunch of them. I watched Jeffrey's. There's some great images in there.
Oh, yeah. The grand prize winner. I'm having dinner with him tonight. Remember when we had dinner with you 2 years ago?
Yeah, I do.
And you couldn't believe how many prizes you had won?
I know. I was the pasty, shy Canadian in Los Angeles.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, Philippa, can we open it to questions for both Chris and I, if anybody has them out there?
We can. Of course, I'm having my computer decided to freeze on me just at that moment, so I'm still pulling it up. So we're just going to...
So people know they can hit 5-star if they want to ask a question?
Yeah, they know that. So when you hit 5-star, as soon as my page comes up where I can see that, I will start calling in you guys. So it's in process. So we've got the other thing. I just because of like in my world on my side of things, because I'm on the representation side, I am so big on the networking aspect of this business. And yes, you've got to know your craft, and yes, you've got to get. But just also, you know, where Chris, you were talking about just all the favors that you were able to pull from these people that you had relationships with. And the idea that going to these seminars gives you an amazing opportunity to, like, build community. And so if you don't have, you know, like, that background of going to a film school or being on another set or doing all of those things, but this kind of weekend seminar that Guy's offering is also an amazing opportunity for people to build community and find other people who are up to making stuff.
And network is a big part, by the way, of a seminar. I mean, we eat lunch together both days, for example, where everybody exchanges cards, and we have a networking table at the seminar. So we really push networking. And, you know, a lot of people out there need that help. A lot of, some people are shy. Some writers think they can sit behind their, you know, closed doors and do their thing, but they don't understand. They're going to have to come out and meet agents and managers and directors and get their stuff out there. It's really a networking business. I mean, we stress that a lot. And a lot of what we do at Action Cut is, you know, we try and help people learn how to network.
Which is, I mean, again, especially on our side of the business, on the representation side, it's so huge. It's absolutely invaluable to build that community. And that's how you ask those favors.
It's definitely big, even in the stage when you start moving up in terms of directing it. I mean, you're good as what you did, but at the same time, it's, you know, I've been finding, like, how do you get your face and your name out to those people, and it really is just through networking, getting to know people, whether it's through work or it's going to the festivals, meeting them at the seminars, just immersing yourself in the community any way you can.
No question.
Trying to get your name out there.
No question. No matter what you do in the business, you know?
Yeah. I've really learned a lot about, and, you know, the attitude, too, when I was down with Guy and he'd set me up with meetings. It was the first time I'd ever gone to a pitch session. I came, you know, just ready and worked myself up, and I just felt so awkward doing it. It was just something you kind of had to get used to. And, you know, borderline, you know, getting discouraged, wondering if I can even do this. And then, you know, on the terms of the pitching side. And then this summer I just kind of relaxed and was like, whatever, went in and got my first offer on a script this summer. So it was
good for you. Congratulations.
How it worked. Yeah, it's
awesome.
Bizarre.
So you've been polishing your pitching skills, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, man. Good for you.
That's awesome. I have my page up. So I've got a caller, 404-788.
That's me.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Michael Harper. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Mike.
And this question is for whoever can answer it, and it's kind of a 3-part question. Is there one genre that sort of dominates the short film market right now, and is there one that might be underrepresented? And if so, should I stay away from the one that may or may not be crowded and write for the one that might not have as many scripts going for?
That's a good question. Let me take a stab at it. From the many movies that we see, and you know, this year was even bigger than the other 3 years for Action Cut competition. We got over 1,000 films from around the world. To be honest with you, there is no particular genre that you should lean on. Like, we had everything from, you know, comedies to horror movies to dramas. I mean, the one that won, for example, if you could take a look at it after a phone call, is an incredibly stylistic film. And what is it about? It's about a guy who's sent down from the U.S. government to get rid of a few bad guys in Tijuana and in Mexico, and he stays there so long that, you know, he has a personality change. I mean, and the film is so stylistically done that it just blew us away. So, you know, it was really a story about a guy going to Mexico to take care of a couple of bad guys, and then it turned into this other amazing thing. And Chris's film, for example, Jesse, was really about a blue-collar kind of guy on the fringes of the world of, you know, criminality, and he's got a wife and kids, and he's trying to, you know, deal with that and be a good dad and a good husband. At the same time, he comes from, you know, the wrong side of a road and really puts his family in jeopardy because of it. I'm just telling you two of the films that won. The first year, the best film that won was about an author who writes books, a best-selling author, and he's having visions of his characters coming to life, and one of them, particularly Femme Fatale character, is actually trying to kill him. So, you know, I guess a lot of these are more in the drama department than in the comedy department. So I can tell you that even though there's great shorts that have made a lot of noise on the internet, like Will Ferrell's one that Philippa mentioned, most of the stuff that's winning here at Action Cut is dramatic stuff. Now, at the same time, we have an animation division, so, you know, that's a whole different ball game. A Christmas Story won this year, and it's up if you want to see it. Documentaries go from anything to everything. You know, this one that won this year is about, it's called Downwinders, and it's about, you know, the testing of nuclear sites back in the 50s and how the wind was blowing down on this town called Parowan, and they found out years later that most of the town died from cancer. So I can't tell you if there's any particular genre that is more favorable for shorts or not. What I can tell you is that the winners are always have great stories and are really polished as far as their scripts and their acting and their production values. That I can tell you.
Excellent.
I think, yeah, that's great. Now, I noticed there's actually a ton of questions, and I want to take them. I wanted to stop again real quick because we've got some really cool offers. But, I mean, Guy, you put together such an amazing prize package for your winners of the cut, but also for registrants now for your upcoming fall filmmaking seminars. We've put you together with Chris Soth of Million Dollar Screenwriting, and he's sort of doubling the value. So anybody who's sort of on this call registers for those seminars, and we is going to have the opportunity to get sort of not only just a 2-for-1, but a 3-for-1, because we're doubling the value of the Action Cut seminar. That's a how much is that seminar? Because it's an amazing.
It's $295 the early bird, and the early bird is always 10 days before each date. So most people get in, obviously, for the $295 price. But like Philippa said, one of the great things is that if people sign up in the next couple of days, they will get 6 months free on Hollywood by Phone, which is goes on every single Sunday. It's another teleseminar, and you get to talk to industry people, all sorts of different industry people. I'll be on the one this particular Sunday, and I know some of you are already registered for it. And also Philippa gives an amazing seminar about screenwriting and how to build a career, and it's 5 sessions, and that's $297, and she's throwing that in as well as a freebie, as an incentive for you guys to sign up for Action Cut in the coming days. So you're getting over $500 worth of freebies if you're ready to take Action Cut.
Yeah, and I'm just sure we'll give people the dates. I mean, everything's on the website, but it's Fort Lauderdale. He's going to be there October 12th to 14th.
Right.
And then he's going off to Chicago the next weekend. He'll be there October 19th to 21st.
Right.
And then Los Angeles, November 2nd to 4th.
Correct.
And New York the following weekend, November 9th through 11th. Now, you also put together an additional deal with your buddy because visual effects are something that's already also there's quite a bit of interest in. So if they want to take a third day, there's also that option to
I got to tell you, that's really interesting. It's the first time we've ever done it at Action Cut because visual effects is becoming so huge and so big that, you know, I wanted to bring a specialist in to be able to give like a quick look look at special effects, both 2D and 3D and in camera effects. And there's a friend of mine in Florida who runs the Effects Institute, and he's got something called a Visual Seminar 101, Visual Effects 101, and we decided to offer it as part of the weekend. So Action Cut is always on Saturday, Sunday from 9 in the morning to 6, and we decided to have also the Visual Effects Seminar, the two evenings, the Friday night from 7 to 10 and the Saturday night from 7 to 10. It's kind of like a super film weekend of knowledge, not only about filmmaking, but also about visual effects. And it's the first time we've ever done it. And when you go to register, you'll see that you can register for either one if you wish, or you can register for both. And there's obviously a great discount if you do that.
Where do they go to register?
Right at the website at actioncut.com. You can register from there. Just go to the seminar section. There's three sections to the website. There's one for the seminars, one for the competition, and one to buy the seminar on DVD and VHS. So if you just go to the seminar section, you will see all about it, all the topics that will be covered in both seminars. And then there's a registration page online, and everybody registers through it. It's a secured page.
That's great. And I just also want to just plug just some of the guests. The Hollywood Exxon has just been having such cool guests, and a lot of agents and managers and producers and writers. And I know they've got Jason Blumenthal, who is an escape artist who produced Streets of Happiness and many other projects, and has his deal over at Sony, and he's one of the guests. And agent-turned-manager for Metropolitan artists, and Michael Lent, who wrote Breakfast with Sharks, and it's good. We've just got a fantastic lineup. A lot of development executives. I think the last guest was the woman who runs Wendy Finerman's company, Wendy Finerman, who produced Forrest Gump, among others. So it's a wonderful sort of access to Hollywood, and it's very intimate. A lot of Q&A. Ask these people your questions. Query them as and when. Most of the guests are very amenable to that. Paul Levine is another literary agent and attorney. So great, you know, resource. And then, of course, I love my class. It's fun. And I just am like happy for anybody who's like, you know, on the Action Cut list to jump in. I've got it coming up starting this week and running through the following weekends. And it's all available on MP3 and the transcripts and all the rest of it. So.
And yours is a teleseminar, right? It's done on the phone like this?
Yeah, and it's sponsored through Chris's $1 million screenwriting, so that's why it's $1 million screenwriting bonus package. And it's done like this. It runs for 90 minutes, and it's got an active Google group where people can download tons of information. It's very Q&A, you know, it's a lecture, but also has very Q&A oriented, and oftentimes I meet with my students, you know, for office hours, and I try to make myself very available in a forum that I wouldn't otherwise be able to, given the context of our position in industry. So let me jump back to questions. But, yeah, so I really encourage everybody. Like I said, I'm such a huge fan of what Guy is doing, and that's why we decided to put this together. It just made a lot of sense. And having done teleseminars, I was like, hey, cool, let's put you on one, since people really need this information. And we thank you for being here today. And so I'm going to turn it over to questions.
Yeah, it's awesome. Guys,
we've got a few of them.
Guy's helping out a lot of filmmakers out there. Happy guys like him are around.
Thanks, Chris. That's appreciate
awesome.
It.
All right, question. Chris, I don't know if you've got to run back to set. I don't want to let you go because I don't know how many questions.
Chris, do you have to run? If you have to run,
I'll stick around for 5 minutes. We were just on lunch, and I know.
Oh, okay, you're shooting night.
Okay, I don't mean to hold you guys up. Okay, I don't know which questions are for you or for Chris, but Chris, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And if there's some questions specifically for you, or can we get you by email?
Well, he said he can actually stay a few more minutes.
Yeah,
you can.
Okay, so okay, great. So I've got 440-377.
Hello?
Yes, quick question. For short filmmakers that want to put their films into festivals, for both you gentlemen, what are some of the top festivals for short films?
Chris, you want to talk about your experience and maybe some of the better ones that you enjoyed and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. We went right out of the gates. We took our film to the notorious big ones. There's always like your Cannes Film Festival, the Sundance, and the Berlin. And then after that, there's kind of a tier that, Action Cut, to me, I felt was right up there with those ones. When we won it, that's why we were super stoked. If you can get it, try to get it out to as many as you can. If, you know, you get denied from Toronto's a big one as well. say Toronto, Sundance, the Berlin, and Cannes. But after that, they're all equally – well, that's not equal. It's hard to say. I know Nashville, when we went there, it was fantastic. They were,
what was the name of that festival?
It was just the Nashville International Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
And that one was wicked. We had a great time there.
It had a great section for shorts, or was it just only for
shorts?
Yeah,
it was. I know there, if you won the competition there, you were up for nomination for an Oscar.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Did they have features as well, or just shorts?
Yeah, they had a great feature section. I know I met Craig Brewer when I was there, the guy that did Black Snake Moan. You know, he did a seminar and then got to go out, and they definitely know how to party in Nashville with the film festival. You know, the festivals are kind of all about that. So if you get your one thing for sure is if you get your film to that festival, man, go. Whatever it is, wherever it is, go out and get out there, because when your movie's done, there's a crowd there and people want to talk to you, you know, and it's worth every penny to get out and go with your movie.
I've heard good things about South by Southwest. I've heard real good things about Austin.
Yeah.
The Palm Springs Film Festival for shorts now is growing. It's getting much bigger than it used to be, and they're doing a lot of press for their winners. And by the way, that's what you want. You know, a lot of people ask me about festivals and which are the good ones, and I only have one answer, the ones that get press. Because you don't want to win a festival that has no reporters there or that has no media there, because then nobody's going to hear about your film winning. And that's the most important thing that you want. You want to be able to go where they make noise for their winners, either by sending out press releases or having a party for them, or, you know, you want to be written up in Filmmaker, you want to be written up in Movie Maker, Script Magazine. What you want is publicity. And that's why with some of the prizes that Chris won were actual editorials in both Script and Movie Maker, and that's what his boss saw, reading those magazines. So the best festivals are the ones that do the best media. And that's really the key to a festival, because you want to be able to get your name out there and get people to hear about your movie. I hope that answered your question.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else out there have a question?
Oh, yeah.
Philippa?
Oh, yeah. I've got 213-999.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, this question is for Chris, actually. I'm about 2 months away from production on my own short film right now. So I had
good
two
luck.
Questions.
Yeah, good
thank
you.
Thank you, yeah. But my two quick questions were, one, you were saying that you were doing a lot of revisions trying to bring the page length down to the ideal page length. Mine's 20 pages. I've been advised to go about 17 to 18. Around what page length did you get yours down to? And second of all, I'm applying for the Panavision New Filmmakers Grant. You said that you got your camera and your film stock and all that. I don't know if you said it was donated, but you got all that stuff for free from Panavision. I was wondering how exactly you went about doing that.
Yeah, with Panavision, you know, we went. That's the cameras that we use on our TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went. I went into the production house, and I went in with. I put a whole package together. You know, like, it's not just about like, hey, can I have your camera? You know, put a package together about your film, almost like you would when you're trying to, you know, promote it to the film festivals. You know, with your team and everybody involved, so that they know you're serious and they know what you're doing. And then, you know, as long, you got your insurance, you have everything set up and ready, so that you're pitching them like you're pitching money, like you're going into a producer is what I ended up doing. And you know, the guy gave me time. Jeff, his name was, and he, you know, was head of the production house, and they have a program there where they'll you know, they'll support young filmmakers. And he sat down and listened to me, and at the end he was just like, well, good luck, kid. We'll give you a camera. Here you go. Shook my hand. And then from there, you know, I had to have the right team and the right people that knew how to use that gear, you know, and that made him comfortable knowing my DP and my camera operators work on the show I work on, and that, you know, he knew it was all going to go out and come back just fine. So that was, you know, how we kind of got lucky with the camera gear.
What about your script pages?
Yeah, the script pages. That was,
where'd you finish that?
I finished it at 30 pages, and I cut it down to a 26-minute short, and I cut quite a bit out. And it's tough with me because I wrote a script that I was really passionate about, and I poured a lot of heart and passion into it that I found it very hard to cut down less. But I found we didn't get into a lot of festivals because of our length. You know, they do often say the ideal length is around 12 to 15 minutes.
Well, let me add a couple things to that. Most short film festivals have a 30-minute limit, and we do as well at Action Cut. So you definitely don't want to go over 30 minutes. The winner this year was 10 minutes. Chris was 26 minutes. Also, I want you to know that there is a filmmaker program, as I think you know, at Panavision. You can go to their site because it's one of the awards that our grand prize winner wins is to get into the Panavision New Filmmaker Program. But you can also do that also. You have to apply, and you have to go in there and talk to them, and they pick certain people, and then they give them a free camera to do their short or their feature. And as long as you're in the United States, because it doesn't work outside of the States, they don't want to ship them. But you can actually apply for that program yourself if you go to their website and go through it. I don't know how long it takes to get into it. And when you'll be ready, you sound like you'll be ready in 2 months. That might be a little too fast for them. But
well,
you may want to ask.
It said they usually respond within about 3 weeks, but to allow about 2 months' time just in case you don't get it so that you can go, you know, with different avenues of trying to get a camera and whatnot.
Right. Plus, I found out through a grapevine they have a bunch of cameras. So even if somebody else is using, you know, an equipment, they actually have two or three other cameras that they can give you. So if you, it all has to do with, you know, scheduling and who's ahead of you because you get on the list. But the guy who runs it is a friend of mine, and like I said, he's one of the prize winners. He gave us that where you immediately get, if you win Action Cut, as the grand prize, you get the Panavision Award, which is basically immediate entry into that program. But even the winner has to wait till the equipment is available, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Excellent. I'm going to take one more. We're coming up on an hour here, so I want to. I do want to wrap up. We got one more question. So I'm going to take one more question here. Let's see. 781-255. Hold on 1 second. I haven't unmuted you yet. All right, go ahead. 781-255.
Yep, right here. My name's David Letender. How you doing?
Hi, David.
I took Action Cut with Guy in 2002 in Boston at Harvard.
Great. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, man.
Great. Just had a quick question for you. Actually, it was about networking. And I'm an actor mostly, but I'm actually going more towards, because of your class, towards the filmmaking aspect as well. I go back and forth a lot. Can you recommend any good, like, networking sites online or things to put your material up, like if you do have a reel and stuff like that?
Well, you know, one of the first things is you're from Boston, right?
Yep.
That's a huge film community there. I mean, that's why we go there every now and then. We're not
going
to
we're getting bigger, definitely.
I understand there's a whole bunch of groups, especially about screenwriting, that I wanted, if you're going to get into writing, there's a Harvard screenwriting group that anybody can join.
Mm-hmm.
There's other really good groups about that. There's also one of the things for actors is you've got some great filmmaking schools there. I know Emerson is one of them.
Yep.
And I know, I think Boston U has a great film program.
Yep.
Where you can actually, you know, if you need material to show or build your reel, you can actually shoot student films and hope that, you know, the guy's good and that your scene is going to be great, and then you can use it for that. As far as networking, I got to tell you, I from having been there, and having talked to so many people, there seems to be so many different kind of groups for networking in Boston. It's a very active film community. And also, you might want to reach a little bit into New York. You know, it's not that big of a trip if you get a job there or if you meet some people there that could help you.
Mm-hmm.
And New York is huge, as I'm sure you're aware.
Oh, yep.
But, you know, it's a matter of joining groups, and there's a lot of news groups on the Internet for filmmakers and actors and writers. I would certainly join those. I know a friend of mine is in like 20 of them and stays in touch with a lot of people around the country. But, you know, I'm glad you brought networking up because I got to tell you, it's one of the most important things that you got to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things that we talk about at the seminar is, you know, you got to be an extrovert. If you're an introvert, you got to change. If you don't like people, you better start liking them, you know, because this is a people business. What have you been doing as far as getting more into the filmmaking area?
Oh, I've just been I just got myself a nice 3-chip digital camera, HD.
Oh, great.
And I'm actually filming a few little things, little shorts around here in the Boston area. But I've also been getting back into acting again. I've done a few little films here. I'm actually doing a movie on it called Indiana James and the Raiders of the Lost Shaker of Salt. It's a spoof on Jimmy Buffett and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, so I'm acting in that.
Do you have an editing system?
Yeah, I've got Adobe.
And how's that working?
I just got it, so I'm actually kind of learning it all.
Okay, good. I got to ask you, how much did it cost you? Just because I'm sure a lot of people out there are wondering how much does an editing system cost.
Oh, yeah, it was about $800 altogether.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
Yeah, for the software. It's pretty cheap. It's not too bad. I mean, some of those systems can get pretty expensive, but now with, like you said, everything compared to even 5 years ago is getting cheaper.
Yeah. Well, listen, great talking to you. I haven't seen you since Boston. I wish you well, and I wish you good luck, and I'll see you down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Are you coming back anytime soon? I know you
probably maybe in the spring we'll do Boston, but at the moment the closest I'm coming is New York.
Oh, great. Maybe I'll try to get my chance to get in there again. So
that'd be great, man. As you know, we always have lunchtime, so if you ever listen, hit us at lunchtime, you can always join us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, man.
And I was going to say, just as an aside on that, when you talk about networking, that's so much about what my course is about, because I'm on the career development side. And
oh, great.
One of the big pieces that we really strategize and create people's action plans and get them moving on that side. So, it's definitely
Great service you're providing, because writers need that. You know, writers tend to be a little bit introspective and a little bit, kind of lonely people who are sitting there working away. And they really need someone to help them with developing their careers, because their work is so isolated.
And I have a lot of strategies for introverts that they don't actually have to change. But they need to sort of. I have systems for introverts to network. It's really
good.
And it's fun. Now we have one more question, Pop. I know we're sort of running along, so I want to make sure I'm respectful of everybody's time here.
Also, I just want to mention that we're doing this again next Thursday at the same time. If you want to sign up on the website for registration, we'll be talking more about filmmaking and screenwriting. And this Sunday, I'm doing the Hollywood by phone again at 5:30. If anybody's interested, the commentator will be Chris Suff from Million Dollar Screenwriting. So if you guys want to. Yeah. Join us again on Sunday and next Thursday. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. So let me just say, we got 978-761.
All right, Aisha, I got to get going here, guy. They're calling.
All right,
now.
Take care, Chris, and thank you, and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, guys. It's good to hear your voice again, guy.
All right, buddy, take care of yourself.
You too.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
All right. I think actually I lost my 978. All right. Well, guys, we're gonna wrap it up. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you to everybody.
And come join us again. We're going to be just having this wonderful opportunity to answer questions. Next week we're talking about visual and three sort of tips and tricks for really taking your writing and really making it visual. And that I can just say for us on our side of it, it's just finding great scripts is the big challenge. And visual writing is really, really key. So, and when we do find them, there's so much we can do with them. But a big challenge of what we do is finding that stuff that's truly fresh and the familiar and truly well written and well executed. And that comes from people who really understand the business. So, that's why I'm always passionate about people who teach and who help us fill that knowledge gap so that people can be successful. So, again, thank you all. Thank you, Guy, so much
for
being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, and be well.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, one second here.
Thank
I'm just going to unmute the line here so we can go live.
Okay,
so guys, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Guys, goodbye.
Take care. Goodbye. Bye.
Right. I'm going to go back in Europe. I know. And I know I'm studying, I write about it, but I keep to myself, and I know a lot of weekends in my group, and it's like some people are like, hide it. I'm not hiding. I'm proud of it because it's spirit, water, so I'm surprised you're being spiritual doing drugs. It doesn't matter because that's totally against life,
Well, yeah.
Hello?
I'm not perfect.
Nobody is, but
hello?
God loves us the way we are.
Hello?
People like...
So check it out. I'll be back.
Yeah, but Brad, let's say this is a non-issue. Let's forget about this whole issue of separation of bedrooms. Let's talk about... about the one issue of the 800 square foot we're going to lose. That's worse. That's the issue, I think. And that's why I made the decision to go ahead and kick the bedrooms. I was going to initially design the bedrooms upstairs anyway. You and I had talked about it, remember? But the more I thought about it, I saw how limited my footprint was then. Because we're already taking and putting a three-car garage underneath already. That takes a chunk out of the basement. And so as a result, we don't have the luxury of having a smaller footprint and being able to still get the square footage you want at the end of the day when you're going to market this out. I think we need to maximize our square footage of marketing, marketable living square footage, correct? And we're going to lose at least 600 square foot to 800 square foot of living space if we have a smaller main level footprint. That's the big issue, I think. Because that extra 800 square foot is not going to cost you that much to build, but yet if you do it right, it's going to market for every bit of the 800 to 1,000 bucks a square foot, right? That could be $1 million worth of profit there. Enough separation, we really do. Right, you want to be in its own zone. When you go down that gallery and you go through those arches, when you open up the door, when you step in, you've got to step into your own world. Yeah, and it I think I've got it designed where I'll do that. It does exactly what your house does now. Right. I've kind of got it that way. I really do. Yeah.
Hello.
Right. Yeah, I see. Here's the way I look at it, Brad. The answer to that is yes. But the solution to it, I think, is a major compromise on floor plan, that at the end of the day, we may have the garage closer for the kitchen, but the sacrifice I have to make this floor plan work is going to be major. Because I don't know where I'm going to tuck that garage. I'm looking at it. I've got it right in front of me. You know, I'm trying to figure this thing out. When you called, I was trying to kind of figure this out. And I can't figure out where to move it without taking my kitchen and completely maybe even moving my kitchen. But then my kitchen's getting away from my family, and I can't have that. I don't know what I'm going to do. And if I can't slide my family room over enough because we got too narrow of a lot to be able to put my garage and tuck it behind the family room because I can't. Right. And if you look at the front edge of where my garage door is when I go into my garage, I'm tight for my back out as it is already. So if you follow that garage wall, see what, do you have the plan in front of you? No. Well, yeah, what? Yeah. Say that again one more time. Yeah, they don't like a tandem. And hey, Carla. I can do that, but I have some dining room windows that go out to a courtyard that we probably lose. Then I need, I gotta have windows though, Brad, because of my light and ventilation requirements. Yeah. See, I've got my setback I'm working with, but I don't have a room to do that. No. Not really. You know, know, I could pick up a driveway that comes up there next to the garage, rework my pantry so that you could park your car, get out, walk in, and bring the groceries directly into the pantry or into the kitchen. Yeah, I know. I just, I really don't. Go ahead. No, I don't think it will. Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to think about what you're saying. What are you talking about dealing with wet and alfalfa the same way? You're talking about Barton? Right. And Carla, in your instance, we had the luxury of the fact that the lot was a pie shape and it got really wide over where your garage was. I was able to take that garage and slide it back and put it, you know, back behind the kitchen. No, yeah, right. Yeah, well, yeah, and I didn't have room. I mean, I would love to have done a 90-degree approach on it where you're not looking at garage doors, but we didn't have the width at all, and we had a slope we're dealing with on Barton and the setback. I couldn't do a side approach garage. I had to do a front load. Yeah. Sure. Right. Right. Well, when I was talking to you guys, I was, whenever I was talking to you and Mark the other day, I was telling you, or maybe it was yesterday anyway, when I was going through the design with you, I was telling you my one big issue was coming from the garage, trying to figure out how to get into the house in a at least non-utilitarian way so you're not looking right at this garage door and get into the house. With where my garage was ended up being. I realize the issue. But by biting the bullet and doing what I did, I was able to pick up basically pretty much a layout that's going to feel great as far as everything goes. I know you guys aren't throwing, you know, darts at that, but my compromise I've got to make to get the garage over there, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I mean, if I didn't have the concept of, you know, when you come in the grand foyer and you look straight through the house, if we weren't working with that as a concept, I would have that extra area to utilize with other rooms, and I can completely reconfigure spaces and make it work. But I think that is the one feature of the house that knocks people's socks off when they step in. Their jaw hits the floor because they look at this absolute gorgeous backyard and seeing all the glass through there. So with that element in this design, that affects all of my other footprint areas to make rooms work, you know. And I've got that chunk of space. I can't put rooms in there because we got it open to the back. So it just takes all the spaces and makes everything else tighter to make it work. Does that make sense, what I said? Um, Exactly. Well said. Yes. No, no problem. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of doing a sketch right now, but it really is not. Yeah, it's not working. You think that's more important? Really? See, I disagree there a lot. Right. Okay, I've got what I feel to be a pretty nice solution here, guys. You don't have the plan in front of you? Okay. You know where my elevator is? I kind of come off the entry, and I have that hallway or corridor that we're sharing to get into the elevator and also to get into the garage. All right? Behind that elevator on the exterior wall side of the house, that elevator wall actually sticks in from where my dining room wall is. If I were to take my dining room wall and connect it over to my garage going past the elevator chamber, I could pick up a door that comes into sort of a little bit of a corridor with a nice window there, off the garage, straight in, and go right across my dining room where my French doors are that go off to the courtyard. Then from where I enter my garage to go into the walk-in pantry, I'm only going 16 feet and I'm there. In other words, I'm actually going across my dining room, but there's no table and chairs there because I got windows and French doors there. So I'm coming from my garage straight across into my kitchen. I'm there. That, you know, that could be a neat corridor I can create. And then, I still think I want to have another door going into my garage off the entry hall, but that could be really nice. Yeah, we know it would, because now you are going through your dining room, but my God, when you come in, you bring your groceries in, you're not very far at all. And if you measure 16, 18 feet and step it off, that's not bad. Yeah. I mean, we could call it a chef's entrance, just a. Oh yeah, I pick up a little bit of square footage, but I think I could pick up that because I'm only picking up maybe 30 square feet, at the most 20. Right, so now they come in and say, well, gee, how do we get our groceries in? Well, you go through this door right there and you're there. Yeah, I like that. We just improved the plan, I think. Well, I believe that I think it wouldn't have been as much an issue as I think you're lending it. But you know what? When you're marketing this caliber home, we cannot be missing on any cylinder. I understand. I agree with you. Right. You know what? I think that we can do that on this. I really do. And now I think, Carla, with your added comment regarding bringing your groceries in, this has just improved this plan. And this is actually, see, I would never have designed this way, and I've never done it before, but this is a solution, I think, that gets us what we want. Well, what's that? The laundry room's over by the bedrooms. You know, there's some people want it right by their kitchen, but whenever you, they've never argued with why is it over by the bedrooms. They've never argued with that. They have argued, though, that, you know, why is it by my kitchen? But I run into a lot of people that want their laundry off of their kitchen. Yeah, see, at least on yours on Barton, there's bedrooms close to there. Well, you could also put a stack washer dryer in your closet if you wanted to in the walk-in, if you'd want. But your laundry's on that wing, so I wouldn't bother. Yep. I'll tell you what, I say this with conviction, I really do, Brad and Carlo, is that I think this plan that we've got going for us with the windows looking at the areas we're looking at and with the entry and the dining room courtyard, and I think this house has all the potential in the world to be an absolute stunning house. When people walk through, they have to have it. I know I've given you this song and dance you probably heard before. I felt that way on Barton, you know. I just felt Barton really had everything going for it. And I think this one has every bit as much going for it, except Barton has so much more of an advantage because it's a couple blocks from town. You've got your gorgeous backyard. To duplicate that, there's not many lots of alfalfa you can do what you've got. So. Right, and when I designed Barton, I designed it how I would consider to be cutting-edge design that picks up everything that what the market wants right now. My taste has not changed. Actually, that wasn't true. I had another design from Barton at the beginning that was a little different, but you know, for the most part, most of it stayed the same. You're right, Carla. I think you go Tuscan myself, and who's to say whether or not Tuscan's being overdone, but you know what, if you do it right, it can't be overdone if it's done right. True, yours is the first one, and it's not a spec.
We can do that. We can do more Mediterranean. We can go more of a Santa Barbara. We can go more Italian. We can. I think any of those will work as long as it's tastefully done. Yeah, the pushback that I see people doing is when you go too rustic. Yeah, right. That's kind of what I think what you're saying when you say Mediterranean, though, Carlos, to get away from the rustic, correct? A little bit. It could have gone rustic very easily, Brad. No, it's the way you decorated. I'm talking about the exterior as well. We could have gone more rustic on the exterior. Yeah, exactly. So, but you didn't. Yeah, I would probably not do... I would not do all the exposed rafter tails, because that's a lot of money, and it gives a little more rustic overtone. I think you can get by with a really nice soffit and go with some material that almost looks maybe even go, considering going some cool stone coving or crown molding underneath the eaves that would look really nice. You're talking about the rafter tails? Yeah, well, hey, if you want, and you're right, Brad, it is about $30,000. So if that's a price that works for you, then let's do it. Then still. It's quality. Yeah, you follow the detail all the way. You have to do it in this caliber home. That's something that I would not do, and I'll tell you why. I think that houses sell when they have character, and I think when it's more contemporary and a little cleaner, I think what happens is it looks a little more common. That's just me speaking. Yeah, I like a house to be a living organism. When people walk through, they feel like it's alive and it's a living. Your house feels that way. It really does. Sure they can, exactly. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've done two houses that some pretty high dollar people bought. One of them was Dave Drummond, the guy with Google. He took a house that was a classic French inside and out, and he's taken the inside and making it ultra contemporary. I have another house I did where we went more clean lines and everything's a little more craftsman-y, prairie, contemporary looking, and the owner is making it completely Tuscan inside. So it's, you know, the jury's out. There's different people, different styles. I personally would have more of a European old world overtone, and the reason is because the people that have money travel. And when they travel, all they talk about is going back to Europe. Back to Europe. And if you can give them a taste of Europe here in Los Altos Hills, I think that they love that. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to go crazy, bold, wild colors because now they got to furnish it somehow. But you can certainly do some things with some great color and textures that give it a little bit of a... you know, kind of an undertone of an old world feel, but yet still not get too busy and dark, and I think it's perfect then. All right. Well, the biggest problem I saw with this garage issue, and I think I've got a solution that keeps, and I'm not trying to understand, guys, I can draw this thing from scratch without losing any sweat or blood, and I'm okay. I don't mind redoing it, and I'm not trying to sell you on something that I'm just trying to avoid having to redo. Believe me, that's not the point. The point is I want the best design possible, and I think what we've got, when I look at the concessions and the compromises I've got to make the garage work, I can't figure out how to make it work, but what I just did works great. I think it's perfect because it actually is, it's kind of making it unique in that you're coming in and even though you're having to go through your dining room, it's a close proximity and you're not going around furniture at all. It's a traffic pattern anyway. No, what it is, Carla, is do you guys have the plan at home at all so you can look at tonight? Okay. What it is I'm going behind the elevator on the dining room, French door side of the dining room. It's kind of going, all right, let me explain where it's at on your house. Well, you're living in Barton right now. Go to the corner of your living room. You know how your living room sticks out, the corner of it sticks out beyond your dining room? Picture a door going into there that right now goes to the outside of your house. Picture a door going through there and through the outskirts of your dining room over to your kitchen. So basically you're going from your living room into your kitchen on the French door side of your, or the window side of your dining room. Right now you've got a piece of furniture there and a mirror, I believe. Well, I'm not adding any width. We had that width built in anyway, Brad, because you have to have room to get around your table. You're walking along the back side of your table there. No, I don't. All I have to do is add the area to walk from my garage into my dining room. I'm still coming into the dining room where it is right now. My dining room's not changing at all. It's just that my dining room corner, there's that hole or the archway going from the garage into that the dining room across where what we've got are French doors in this new design. Yours has a wall there with some windows, and you've got a feature in between the windows. But instead, that's all going to be French doors going out to that courtyard off the side. See, I was considering when I was doing your house, I was considering picking up French doors out of your dining room going out to that side yard, but the thing is, that's where your garage is. It's not attractive. Plus, we needed the back-out room to get your cars in and out. In this case, we don't have that. We've got, from our dining room looking out, we've got 15, 30, we've got 45 foot of yard there on the side of the house for the French doors to feed out to. So, you know, I've got French doors there, and if you're going to have French doors there, you know you're not going to put a piece of furniture there anyway. So I'm walking into my dining room and walking straight into the kitchen. Or actually, I'm not even walking into the kitchen. I'm walking into where the walk-in pantry is first, through the butler pantry, which is the perfect place to bring your groceries and set them down on that cabinet or into the kitchen and, you know, put them into your pantry. I think it worked out really well. This is an improvement, guys. Yeah. All right. This alleviates the garage to kitchen issue completely, Brad. Yeah. Yeah, I can do that, but it just becomes more common then. You know, Yeah, but one thing, Brad, is there's the two first things that make people want to like a house. Number one, curb appeal. Then once you get them in, when they step into that entry door, right, I understand, but when they step in that front door, their second decision is what they see when they step in. And if their jaw can hit the floor and you can do something completely outstanding they're not expecting, which this does, I think you're going to get them. I think if you can grab them in the first two or three checkpoints, you've got them. No, it doesn't guarantee a buy, but what it is if you have any kind of a common, you've got to excite them on every point if you can. And I think exciting them when they step in and look at glass looking straight out to the rear and the sunken terrace, the way it's going to be designed with the fountain and all lit up, looking at that whole thing. It's a sculpture that they're looking at. The second they step in, they're looking at this sculpture. I think it's something they don't expect to see. What we're doing here, you don't see it in many houses where you step in, you got this wall of glass looking straight out in the backyard. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're phrasing it a different way. It's like, so when did you stop beating your children? The way I look at it is what's more important, I understand when you're talking about looking through your yard, what I think is most important more than anything is that first impression when people open up that door. And I think no matter what I do, if I rework this house with the garage, that's what I was telling Mark earlier, if I relocate my garage, I'm looking at this layout of rooms, I don't know how I would rework it and still pick up a jaw-drop effect when I come in the entry. I mean, hey, I could probably create it, but I don't see it happening right now, and maybe I'm not seeing something into it. But if I rework this design by moving the garage back, I really don't know what I'm going to do I think the floor plan hurts as a result of it, and I just think we're losing more than we're gaining, especially now that I've got this hallway here. Yeah, okay. Well, the change with the stairs going down to the changes we're talking about, number one is the garage and kitchen issue. Number two is picking up a set of stairs going down to the basement on the other side by the other garage, correct? And that's the only two I know about. What's the third one? Gotcha. Okay, no problem. I can do that. I already know how to do that. That's easy. Because I think we've already got that already. We've already got a good distance. We just have to make that hallway magical. Yeah, no, I already went with a 5-foot wide hallway. And 5 foot is nice width. And if you barrel the ceiling and put some wall sconces and do some things to decorate that corridor and make it more like a gallery where it's an experience, and then they come in and then they come through another arch that then widens up almost like a little bit of a vestibule before you enter the master suite, I think you've done everything that it needs to give it that sense of uniqueness and its own world. Yeah, it works. Got it. I know, and I'm planning on having Kayleen start putting this in the computer hopefully like Monday, and I, no, if the garage issue doesn't get resolved, I'm telling you what, I'm at square one. Yeah, okay. Oh, you'll see it tomorrow. I'm at the office still, I'll probably work on it tonight. I got here at 6 this morning, and what time is it now? Anyway, I just got off the phone with a director down in L.A., and I've now got to get back to work. All right. Thanks. Bye.